What makes ground holy? Does it need the blessing of a bishop? Is it the praying of 10,000 prayers or the blood of the martyrs? Is it the pilgrim's feet tracing over the centuries or the ceremonies that join one generation to the next? Could it be the march of the multitudes as they cry out for justice or the addict's tears as she cries out for release? What makes ground holy? I doubt that before the incident with the burning bush, Moses gave much thought to holy ground. Of course, we now know Moses as the great man of the Bible, the freer of the Israelites from Pharaoh's whip, the parter of the sea and the bearer of God's own commandments to the people. But at this point in his story from our Exodus reading, Moses was just trying to lead an ordinary life in the hill country of Midian. He had a checkered past. He was a wanted man for killing an Egyptian, but he was trying to put that behind him now. He was married and had a place of responsibility in his father-in-law's sheep-herding business. He probably enjoyed a bit of wine in the evening and told bad jokes to his friends. Just an ordinary life. But then something extraordinary happened to him. The fancy Emmanuel College word for it is theophany, which means a visible manifestation of God revealed to humanity. Or specifically, in the case of our Exodus reading, God shows up in a burning bush to an ordinary sheep herder. "Moses, Moses, here I am," Moses replies. "Come no closer," the voice says. "Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." I've always been fascinated by this story and how the creator of the entire universe chose the earthly form of a bush, not a mighty cedar or a lily of the field, not a king in his robes or a fearsome grizzly bear, but a simple, nondescript bush. Why a bush? Why a bush is a question we batted about at this week's Zoom Bible study. And one of our group members posited that by showing up in a simple bush, God was saying that no place is devoid of God's presence. God can manifest anywhere because God is everywhere. Here's another fancy word for you, animism. Animism, from the Latin anima, meaning breath, spirit, life, is the belief that objects, places, and creatures all possess a distinct spiritual essence. This is core to the belief system of many indigenous peoples from around the world. Indigenous elder and former United Church moderator, the very Reverend Stan McKay, speaks of sharing and belonging to the earth, where there is an awareness that the spirit moves through all life. It means that faithful living on the earth will be moving in the rhythm of creation. It means vibrating to the pulse of life in a natural way without having to own the source of the music. It is our experience that the Creator reveals truth to creation, and all may share in it. The Christian mystics of the Celtic world had a similar understanding. The land, water, and creatures are sacred, they believed, because they exist within and from the goodness of God. The 6th century Irish monk Columbanus went as far as to say, "If you wish to know the Creator, come to know his creatures." Despite this timeless wisdom of the God of all being revealed to and through creation, humanity has been fixated on putting God in a much smaller box. Moses himself, after receiving a call to go and free his people from Pharaoh's whip, questions God's choice in him and also presses God to reveal God's name to him. Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" The naming of things, it gives a certain power over them. Consider all the plants and animals with their scientific names of genus and species, our countries and provinces and cities, our pets, and even our children. We give them names as a way to exert authority over them, to put them in boxes of our own needs and understandings. It's something we do all the time, to label and categorize. And that is what Moses tries to do with God. "Whom shall I say is sending me? What is your name?" But God shuts this down. God will not be controlled in this way. God says to Moses, "I am who I am. Thus you shall say to the people, I am has sent me to you. The impulse to condense God into something we can control involves the naming of God, but also the locating of God as well. There is an impulse to restrict God's location, what we deem to be holy ground, to a place that suits our needs and understanding, the temple, the synagogue, the church. Rather than saying God can manifest in all bushes, we try to trap God into one bush. When we locate God only in certain places, the implication is that God is not located in other places. Our understanding of holy ground, therefore, gets very small, and it becomes easier to legitimize our ways of destruction, the paving over of soil for our mega highways, the clear-cutting and burning of our most diverse ecosystems for lumber and cattle pasture, the poisoning of our air and water for short-term economic gain. The danger also with locating God, in trying to trap God in a particular place or tradition, is that it is a very slippery slope towards claiming monopoly on God and God's favor, towards saying that the spark of the divine exists within certain persons of creation, but not within others. The devaluing of other persons of creation, both human and non-human, is at the core of some of the most deepest wounds on this planet. Wounds like factory farming, which treats sentient beings as mere commodities. Wounds like the residential school system and the ongoing spiritual and cultural genocide of indigenous peoples. Wounds like anti-black racism in our political, economic, and judicial systems, where some in society are marginalized and targeted because of the color of their skin. In trying to put God in a box, to monopolize God, to try to enslave God, we end up enslaving each other. But then and now, God shuts this down. I am who I am. Thus you shall say to the people, I am has sent me to you. God will not be controlled. I have a bit of a strange story to share with you. In some ways, it is my own burning bush story. Several years ago now, I was on a long walk on the Bruce Trail, a 33-day pilgrimage from Niagara to Tobermory. One day, I was walking through an evergreen forest, you know, the kind where decades of fallen needles have made the path soft underfoot. And I was off in my own little world, probably contemplating supper because the shadows were starting to lengthen. And I came around a corner, and there was a tree, an ordinary pine tree with red mottled bark. And I know how this is going to sound, but in the very core of my being, I knew that the tree invited me to touch it. Touch me, it whispered, into the place where language fails. And so I did. And it was a moment of connection, of longing, of lament and release, as if I was given permission to set down pain I didn't know I needed to set down. And I wept. I wept tears I didn't know I needed to weep. Every barrier within me was broken, and I realized that everything around me was sacred, holy, on fire with God. How could I have not seen it before? After a minute, the moment passed, and I knew it was time to go. But as I left, I looked behind me, and dozens of dragonflies, who were not there before, were following me down the trail, their wings flashing in the dappled light. A more joyful procession I have never been part of. Perhaps this sounds strange to you. Or perhaps it sounds somewhat familiar. Perhaps there have been times in your life when the barriers between the earthly and heavenly realms have seemed to just melt away. When all the labels and boxes we use to set things apart become ridiculous, and it is revealed that we are standing on holy ground. The author and Trappist monk Thomas Merton had one of these moments on the corner of 4th and Walnut in Louisville, Kentucky. Of his experience, he writes, "There at the corner at 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness. I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the person that each one is in God's eyes. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only they could see each other that way, there would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other. What makes ground holy? I know we love our building, this remarkable place where we and our ancestors in the faith have sung and prayed for decades, where we have baptized our babies and said farewell to our dear ones, where we have been inspired and comforted and called into service. For many of us, this is holy ground. But especially in this time when some of us are coming back into the church building and some of us are not yet ready to do so, let us not fall into the trap of trying to put God in a box or defining this community solely by a building. God can manifest anywhere because God is everywhere. We can encounter God here in this church, but also on our couch at home. We can encounter God amongst the pines on the trail or in a busy aisle of the grocery store or on the dock of the bay or on the TTC after a long day at work. We can encounter God in the coos of a baby in our arms, on the tingle on the back of our neck as we really connect in conversation, in the soaring voice of a soprano, in the march for justice in the streets. We can encounter God anywhere because God is everywhere. Again, as Stan McKay says, this encounter requires faithful living on the earth where we move in the rhythm of the creation. It requires vibrating to the pulse of life in a natural way without having to own the source of the music. But when we encounter this divine, when we encounter the divine, when this happens, when the barriers break, when you feel like earth is crammed with heaven, if even for a moment, we ought to be conscious of where that moment is leading us. Be aware of how God may be speaking to us. Don't just pass it off as nothing or bottle it away or label it as silly. Allow the encounter to sink into you, to transform you. When Moses encountered the burning bush, he received a call to be an agent of liberation for his people. When I came upon that pine tree on the Bruce Trail, I had some unprocessed pain that was holding me back. Thomas Merton's fourth and walnut moment became a central metaphor in his quest to live a life of contemplation and communion with God. God does not simply exist above us in an inaccessible spiritual realm or only in specific places defined by human labels, but all around us and within us, all of us, all the time. God is intertwined with the wondrous and ongoing adventure that is creation, the great dance of love we are continually invited to participate in. From within our ordinary lives, God calls us to recognize that the ground under our feet, that life itself is holy. And with this realization, we are compelled to act in ways through kindness and service and justice that honors the divine in our midst, honors the holy that is manifest in creation and beyond creation, the God of all that defies all attempts to be labeled and categorized, the great I Am at the heart of the cosmos, who promises to be with us always. I leave you this morning with one of my favorite lines of poetry. In 1857, the poet Aurora Leigh published these words: "The earth is crammed with heaven, and every common bush is afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit around it and pluck blackberries." Amen.